This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
We are broadcasting live from Jim Boeheim's favorite place on planet Earth, Greensboro Coliseum. And I had a chance to catch up with Jim Boeheim a short while ago. Of course, if you're not clued in, 5 years ago, he had the comments, or make it 4 years ago in Brooklyn. I don't even think he was asked about Greensboro. He was just asked about the central location of Barclay Center for his team. And then he decided to just do a drive-by on Greensboro for some reason. But before we get to what he said years ago, let's hear what Boeheim had to say a few hours ago. I simply asked the question. Well, you'll hear the question. This is Coach Boeheim.
You spoke here about a year ago in Greensboro. Of course, now that you're back, how often do people bring up your comments from years ago?
It's the first time in a year. That's the first time. My only comment was related to, I think it's better for fans to be in a big city, but for coaches, for me, I'd rather come here because it's less traffic, less hassle. People are really nice. Been to Greensboro a couple times, and it's a great place, nice city. I always never thought anything differently. It was strictly a matter of, I think a big city is a better venue for fans to have an experience. But for me, I'd just soon come here. I'd rather come here than go to a big city. It's easier to get around, easier to do what you have to do.
Who? Me? I don't dislike Greensboro. Oh, I love Greensboro. It's the fans that don't. No, babe. I didn't say anything bad about you. It was John over there. He's the one that did that. See, he doesn't like you. I'm cool with you now. Jim Boeheim doing the runaround there. He's clearly backpedaling. I remember last year he spoke at Greensboro. Didn't really do any media aside from speaking at the event he did last May. He had his press conference in Winston-Salem ahead of the Charlotte ACC tournament. I asked him about Charlotte and its value. He gave an answer saying how much he loved the restaurants in the Triad, Winston-Salem, Greensboro. He liked Charlotte, too. He thinks Charlotte qualifies as a big city. But you be the judge if Boeheim is correct, if we're just misinterpreting what he's saying. After all, he said that it's just the fans. It's not him. He loves Greensboro. It's the people are nice here. It's quaint. It's more convenient. There's less traffic. Let's hear what 4 years ago Jim Boeheim had to say. And again, a reminder, he was not asked about Greensboro.
I think the big cities are where it should be played. I think it should be played here, Washington, Atlanta. That's where the tournament should be played. I'm not going to be around that much longer to care about it, but I think that's where the value is. I think there's a huge value in playing the tournament in those places. And there's no value in playing in Greensboro. None. It's there because the league's been there and the office is there and they have 150 people at the ACC meetings. That's why it's there. It should not be there. You get in the media centers and the recruiting centers. How many players they have in Greensboro? I mean, New York, Washington, Atlanta, that's where the media centers are.
Robert, where's all the parts where he said how much he loves Greensboro?
Hang on, they might be in the second clip, but there's two clips to this.
Oh, there's more. I'm sorry. I don't want to take Boeheim out of context. Let me hear more.
Madison Square Garden made the Big East Conference. There's a couple other factors, but made the Big East Conference. And I'm saying all this thing because I don't give a I'm just saying what's right. That's what's right. Why do you think the Big Ten's coming into New York?
It's
business, good business sense. They all say it's a business. Well, then let's start acting like it's a business.
I'm not a business man. I'm a business man. That's what Jim Boeheim's saying there. See, that's what the ACC needs to be about. Greensboro, you can't do business there. What kind of businesses are in Greensboro, America? Nah, we need to be in Charlotte. We need to be in Brooklyn. We need to be in New York City. But wait, where was the Boeheim I talked to 2 hours ago saying how much he loved Greensboro? Did he forget to say that stuff 4 years ago?
I don't know. Maybe he's upset about that you can't just take a really good deep sniff breath of air up in Brooklyn Or in Greensboro. It's not the same as it is up in Brooklyn.
Oh, can you play that second clip, just the end of it, one more time? Speaking of sniffs, because... yeah, but the full context of it. If you missed the end of Jim Boeheim and just how dismissive he was of Greensboro 4 years ago, let me hear the end of that.
They all say it's a business. Well, then let's start acting like it's a business.
Man, Jim Boeheim getting after it. He's not in Greensboro long, so the party begins soon after. Man, what's that smell like to you? That smells like a team that hasn't won before in Greensboro. Mm-hmm. That's what it smells like to me. Remember, 2014, they were favored to beat NC State. They had a million shots in the final 10 seconds of a game on a Wednesday, I believe. And, yeah, they couldn't sniff a bucket. That's... That's the best way to put it. And then the next year, they didn't show up here because they were banned from postseason play. Robert, it sounds like you were making an accusation with that sound in 15. That's not very nice what you did there. Yeah. Yeah, clearly he is taking shots at Greensboro. He's backpedaling a bit. But you know what? That's fine. It's inconvenient. I think he knew the question was coming. And... that's the way he chose to answer it, saying the fans don't like Greensboro. Oh, I love Greensboro. I went to speak there last year. I love it. But it's the fans who might not love it as much. Anyway.
And you know somebody really loves a place when their favorite part about it is, oh, you can get around so easy. Oh, I love I love that place because you can just drive and drive and drive. Oh,
yeah.
I love it.
I love Henderson. Yeah. Henderson, North Carolina. Why? It's so easy to get around. I think we should have the ACC tournament in Henderson.
Henderson, I think we should have it in Kang. You could have it in Kang and get around wherever you wanted to. And
yes.
Have the best hot dogs
yes.
in the state.
Jim Boeheim would love the ACC tournament in Kang.
He would love that.
That's where I can't wait for that. 2023 ACC tournament in Kang, North Carolina. Yeah. Boeheim would be thrilled about that one. There's Carolina Panthers news to get to. Then we'll have Joe Giglio and Connor O'Neill drop by. Wake Forest and NC State basketball insiders here at the ACC tournament in Greensboro. Kyle Allen has been signed to a one-year deal. Remember, he was set to become an exclusive rights free agent. So Carolina, it was essentially their decision. If they wanted to extend him beyond what we saw from him a year ago, this shouldn't really be surprising news at all. According to Ian Rappaport, here's how robust this type of deal is for Allen. He's going to make $585,000. That's right. A little bit more than $500,000. That's what Kyle Allen's going to make. Started 12 games last year. Is there another quarterback, Robert, who started 12 games last year who made $500,000?
I think all the quarterbacks that started last year made $500,000. But just $500,000, I'm not sure.
Oh, just $500,000 is probably what I was shooting at. Yeah, I think all the other quarterbacks, they cleared the $500,000 threshold. So, of course, Carolina brings him back. It's $585,000, and I honestly don't think the Panthers know what they're going to do with Cam Newton. But in sports talk radio, in television, heck, when it comes to column writing, the worst thing you can say is, I don't know. That's a very sexy chyron to put on the ESPN show, NFL Live. Hey, what's your thought on Cam Newton? Yeah, A block. Let's do a segment about how I don't know and the Panthers don't know what's going to happen until they see Cam, you know, perform in a physical. You know, take a physical. It's not the most interesting television. So it makes sense the Panthers extend Kyle Allen, an exclusive rights free agent. If you don't know what you're going to do at the position, it doesn't hurt to have him there. And it's just little risk. I'm not going to say there's high reward there. I don't think it's a good situation anyway if Kyle Allen is starting games for you in 2020, unless your sole intent is to tank, which we've discussed on this show. But that is the latest on the Carolina Panthers quarterback situation. Kyle Allen has been extended 1 year as an exclusive rights free agent. What does NC State need to do to make the NCAA's Field of 68? Is Danny Manning, is his fate already set at Wake Forest? the two best insiders on NC State and Wake Forest, Joe Giglio and Connor O'Neill from the Winston-Salem Journal, will join to discuss next.
He may not be beautiful, and we do sit around all day and talk sports. And yes, Britt McHenry, we feel great about it.
Do you feel good about your job?
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
We are now being joined by Joe Giglio of the Raleigh News and Observer for now, and Connor O'Neill from the Winston-Salem Journal. One covers NC State, the other covers Wake Forest. It's the beauty of the ACC tournament as we all come together in one place. The first time in 5 years that the ACC tournament has been here in Greensboro. And I want to get your thoughts on the breaking news that has just come down. The statement from the Atlantic Coast Conference, I'll read it in full right now. After consultation with local and state health authorities, including the governor and his medical staff, the Atlantic Coast Conference will hold its men's basketball tournament as scheduled this week at the Greensboro Coliseum, as was outlined by the governor during his press conference today. High-risk individuals are discouraged from attending mass gatherings. We will continue to take precautionary measures and follow guidelines outlined by the Center of Disease Control and Prevention. In addition, the league and the Greensboro Coliseum are taking proactive measures to provide a safe and clean environment for its institutions and its fans. So this comes in the wake, guys, of the entire Ivy League deciding to cancel its conference tournament, which means Yale will be going on to the NCAAs. What do you make of how much this has been built up to the point where the ACC is having to put a statement out to tell people, hey, the tournament's still on?
You obviously don't want to put people at risk in a public health situation.
Absolutely.
That makes the most sense, right? To be as cautious as possible. If this was Boston, I think Harvard was the site for the Ivy League where they've had more cases of the coronavirus.
And they've canceled classes there as well.
Yeah, they're like on super duper lockdown. So to me, it makes sense to react in each region and act appropriately for where each event is.
Connor, do you think this is the biggest story of the week? There are a lot of stories heading into Greensboro. Is this the biggest one?
Yeah, I think it kind of takes over. I don't know how much that has to do with the ACC being in a down year, or at least lacking a, you know, Zion Williamson type figure to kind of captivate everybody. You know, last year in Charlotte, we were all thinking Zion's going to come back, and he did come back and was electric. So I don't know how much of it has to do with that and how much of it is this is a national issue. It's a global issue. I mean, you know, even in our little corner of ACC basketball heaven here, it touches it.
Before we get to each of you, your beats, Wake Forest at NC State, this tournament, again, returning for the first time in 5 years. And the other discussion, aside from the coronavirus, that's a popular one today, is Greensboro as a site. I don't really think there's a major conference equivalent to what Greensboro means to the ACC tournament, and the site being as popular as it's been, even though it's not returned in the last handful of years. I don't think it's a certainty that the ACC tournament returns to Greensboro when you consider other conferences have kind of veered away from rotations. The Big 12, they're going to be in Kansas City pretty much the next decade. The SEC, they've seen committed to Nashville. Charlotte's already a part of this rotation for the ACC. Joe, as someone who's covered the league as long as you have, what do you make about the security of this tournament and the future of it coming to Greensboro?
They'll probably try to do special anniversary years here, you know, 75th, 100th, whatever you want to get to.
Because it's a perfect venue.
It is.
The biggest of the bunch. People forget that. It's bigger than Barclay Center. It's bigger than Spectrum Center.
And more fans have access to it, too. I think one thing I talked to Boo Corrigan this week about, and this is his first technical ACC tournament as an AD. Obviously, his dad was the commissioner and understands it fairly well. He was saying, you know, this is like the first time for a lot of ADs in the league to have this experience. So I think they voted previously about sites, not really understanding what Greensboro was to the ACC. This is the chance this week for some of the Pittsburgh and some of these other ADs that are new to the league to kind of go through this and understand, okay, that's what the fuss is all about.
Yeah, that brings me to this stat here. This is something I was talking to Ed Hardin from the News and Record about. He said, there are 9 new ADs that have been hired in this conference alone since the last time the ACC tournament was here. And for every John Curry who knows what this place is all about, and every Boo Corrigan, heck, even Jarman at Boston College, who's from Raleigh, you will find others who maybe have never even stepped foot in this building. So with that in mind, how important do you think this week is, Connor, for the ACC, but more importantly for Greensboro, to prove that it is a viable spot?
Yeah, it's an audition, and there's nothing you can do right now to enhance Greensboro's nightlife to rival that of New York City at this point. Like, you're not gonna all of a sudden have a Times Square pop up on Elm.
We can hit Natty Greens.
Yeah.
Maybe hang out at Joymongers. Those the spots. Maybe we could do that.
Yeah, but it is a chance to show the atmosphere, to show the everything around here, the tailgating that goes around. You don't see tailgating in Brooklyn. The people just ride the subway, go to the game, and go home, or go out in New York. It's a unique venue, and that needs to be conveyed this week, or it might not be back.
Kevin Keats, he's a guest on today's show. Joe, you cover NC State. You have for a very long time. Joe Giglio from the Raleigh News and Observer. Connor O'Neill, Wake Forest beat writer from the Winston-Salem Journal. So what's your sense about what needs to happen for the Pack? It's the ultimate question I've heard from people who probably aren't NC State fans, saying, hey, they have to beat Duke and they have to beat Florida State for them to feel safe. I've heard on the other end of it, yeah, if NC State beats Wake Forest, they're good. They're going to be through. They're not going to deny a team with 20 wins. How do you feel on it?
If you could tell me what Tennessee and Texas and UCLA and Stanford and Xavier, if you could tell me what they're going to do, I'll tell you what's going to happen. The mistake people make is they look at a team individually instead of comparing them to the rest of the bubble. Here's what I know. They're going to put 36 at-large teams into the field. And NC State's resume compares very favorably to those other 10 or so on the bottom of that bubble. They're not being compared to Kansas or Baylor. They're being compared to Xavier and Tennessee and Texas. And by the way, NC State has a better resume than all of them.
How is their case different, or how much more or less comfortable do you feel about their case this year than you did last year, where it was you need to win one game in the ACC tournament at least to have a shot?
They don't have an outlier this year. Last year they did, the 353, with the non-conference strength of schedule, which Kevin Keats finally gave me an amen on after the Wake game. He said it was bad. Yes, thank you. It was the worst in the country. Thank you for finally saying it. So to me, there's no outlier this year. They do have better Q. They have more Q1 wins and better Q1 wins this year. Last year, their wins were over Penn State and Clemson, and Auburn. Obviously, we beat Auburn, but those teams didn't make the field. They have three good wins this year. Are three teams who are definitely in the field,
and teams that are trending upward. We've seen Wisconsin get big wins. Virginia, obviously, is a really good win, especially since it was in Charlottesville. Transitioning things to Wake Forest, our company.
Man, all that bubble talk made me so jealous. I don't know what that's like.
I got years and years of bubble experience for you. Yeah. Trust me, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
So the ACC Sports Journal last week, David Glenn puts out the report saying that Danny Manning was in conversations, already beginning negotiations, his agent at least, with Wake Forest for buyout talk. I could be wrong. I don't remember those rumors coming out a year ago before Ron Wellman decided to keep Danny for a sixth season. What is the latest that you know about Danny Manning's status?
On the buyout stuff, I asked Danny point blank after the game in Raleigh on Friday night if any of the rumors or reports were true, and he said no. And I said, so your agent is not negotiating with Wake Forest right now? And he said, I said no, Connor.
Okay. And what do you make of it being a denial versus saying, I'm not going to talk about that?
I think that's just what he has to say. I don't really compare one and one. My thing with the buyout negotiations is it's been reported that it's a fully guaranteed deal. If it's a fully guaranteed deal, what is there to negotiate? It's either all or nothing. It's either pay me everything up front if you're going to fire me, or I'm going to be back next year.
Well, here's the part that's interesting to me. Jeff Goodman, in the winter of 2018, he reports an $18 million figure that doesn't match up with a fully guaranteed contract. If you're talking about a fully guaranteed deal with 5 years remaining on it, well, shouldn't that be around $10 million? Like, what have you heard since? I know Wake Forest doesn't have to report such things, but I've heard from people in the building that said, well, it's probably closer to $10 to $12 million than it is $18 million. What do you make of that not getting out whatsoever, and also the idea of it being $18 million? Still today, fans believe in that.
See, I think 18 is last year's number. I think it's 15 now. I think it's a $3 million a year deal. I think that you'll never get anybody at Wake to confirm that, because Ron's, one of his lasting legacies is we don't discuss contracts. They act like contracts don't exist. It's frustrating, but at this point, it is what it is. I'm not going to fight it, and I'm not going to change John Curry's mind. Then he's going to all of a sudden start telling me Dave Clawson's buyout and Danny's buyout and every contract in the building. But, you know, I can only go on what Jeff Goodman put out there and what he's never followed up on, and what Wake refuses to even acknowledge.
John Curry was not quoted in your story about the lessening attendance at Joel Coliseum. He declined an interview. What would you be most interested to learn from him about those declining numbers?
I would really want to know the financials and how much money is being hemorrhaged right now with declining attendance, and how much of your revenue that you were getting from parking, from concessions, from advertising, from ticket sales that you're not getting now.
So you work right now, as Joe does, in the news gathering business. You guys are both some of the best journalists we have here in the state of North Carolina. Joe's soon going to be a talk radio host, co-host, like me here, going to be doing some talk radio in the next few weeks in the city of Raleigh. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to get you started right now. This is people aren't interested in just the reporting and facts. They want opinions here. So you hear what Connor is saying about Danny Manning and Wake Forest. How surprised would you be if Danny is back for year seven in Winston-Salem?
I watched them on Friday, and I even said to Connor, I know what a team looks like that doesn't try and has an effort problem. And they have an effort problem.
And that's uncommon too, right? Like Wake Forest, one thing, you can knock Danny for a lot of things. Effort generally is not one of those things. Is it possible those two things are married together? You see the reports about your coach negotiating a buyout, and then all of a sudden you don't show up against NC State?
Well, particularly how they played against Duke. And then what was more impressive to me was they showed up against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
The next game.
First consecutive ACC win since the end of the 2017 season.
Yeah. But in Raleigh on Friday, boy, he does some strange things. He's got a lot of Sidney Lowe in him, Danny Manning. He spent a lot of time in the NBA. He thinks the season's longer than it is. He doesn't have the urgency that you need to have from a game to game. He makes these strange substitutions. He took Olivier Saar out 4 minutes into the game after the kid had, what, 11 points, 12 points?
Yeah.
And it's like he has no fouls. He's not tired. It's the first freaking half. Like, I say this about Dave Doran. If you had a $3 million a year job, you would do everything in your power to protect it. You would. You'd fire the offense coordinator. You'd fire the milkman. You'd fire anybody. Danny Manning's over here like, oh, let me take my best player out for no reason. Like, bruh, protect your own investment.
Remember Jalen Hoard sat the first 9 minutes of the North Carolina game when it was 18 to nothing?
That was –
he was late or something?
He was not late. That was a – I was about to say something I probably shouldn't have. Word, not like anything breaking.
Oh, right.
But
Robert has the dump button, right? Robert, okay. You have your hands floating over it.
Please don't make me use that.
So that was just a punishment, and the late to shoot around was actually he did not come to shoot around.
Oh.
He did not make it. They might have been leaving shoot around as he pulled into the parking lot. But he did not make it to shoot around that morning.
They have got man issues, too, where players leave with nowhere to go. The guys who go pro with nowhere to go.
Bryant Crawford.
We just don't want to be here.
Bryant Crawford left Wake Forest before his senior year, and he was playing in Israel.
Darrell Moore, where is he?
He's in G League Purgatory.
Okay.
I think he's still in the Memphis organization.
These are all things that are not adding up for Danny's future.
Yeah, no. And, you know, Jalen Hoard, they knew Jalen Hoard wanted to be a one-and-done player. If they thought that he was coming back. That's on them. Jalen Horde said from the onset, I want to be a one and done. I came here from France. I spent 2 years at High Point Wesleyan getting coached by Keith Gatlin, who's got players in the pros. Harry Giles played at Wesleyan. Bam Adebayo. He wanted to be a pro. That's why he came here.
If this segment had a headline, it would be, there's a lot of Sidney Lowe and Danny Manning. Joe, Connor, thanks for being here, guys. It's appreciated.
You're welcome.
That's Connor O'Neill. That's Joe Giglio. I'll predict, gosh, this is such a talk radio thing to do. I'll predict every game of this tournament. Next on The Drive.
You wanted to hear some great sports talk? Well, here it is.
Oh, what an appallingly ironic outcome.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
It's not ironic. It's just coincidental.
On Sports Hub Triad.
I want to predict every single game of the ACC tournament. I've gone through the bracket. I have a champion here in Greensboro that will be crowned Saturday night. But before I do that, Robert, it is the month of March, which means we need to bring back a tradition on this show, which is the return of what I believe to be the best sports theme music in America, maybe in the world, which is the March Madness theme. I prefer the March Madness theme over the Masters music. I prefer it over the old NBA on NBC theme, which somehow Fox poached away. Not exactly the greatest look there. I mean, we think the NBA on NBC when we hear that great John Tesh theme. Anyway, Robert, do we have the March Madness music? Because what we need to do, every time there's an update, we're on the air as games are going on, you need to interrupt me if something's happening, no matter where we're at in a segment. You just hit this theme. Ah, yes. Do you think you're capable of doing that, Robert?
I don't know. I might get entranced by this music, but I'll do my best.
Over the next few days, like, we're going to be on the air as NC State is playing yesterday, or playing tomorrow, excuse me. Don't know why I just did that. 2 days from now, Duke, there's a chance they could be playing NC State. Like, as that game's going on, we're going to need some updates here, right? So, no matter what we're doing, Robert, there need to be times you just interject that in there to tell me what's happening. We could do that during the NCAA tournament when first and second round games are being played here in the Coliseum as well. Sound good?
I can make it work.
All right. We're going to get to a hockey brawl in Winston-Salem at the Fairgrounds Annex in just a few minutes. But as I mentioned, I've picked every single game of this tournament. I have my bracket. This is the definitive prediction that we will have here on the show. What I think is going to transpire over the next 5 days, who I have winning the ACC championship here in Greensboro. And since we were playing some of the March Madness music, Robert, bring it back for me.
Jack it off, and so is that.
Whoa. All right. Let's get things started with the 4:30 game, Wake Forest-Pittsburgh. 4:30, the Demon Deacons. There are rumors that Danny Manning has already started buyout negotiations with Wake Forest, him and his agent. That was according to the ACC Sports Journal last week. I think it's going to be Pitt winning this game because last Friday was the first time I can remember Wake Forest having a purely effort issue. I think that is related to this headline. If you learn that your coach was negotiating a buyout, why would you play hard against NC State when they're trying to make it into the NCAA tournament? So I think Pittsburgh wins this game. I like Jeff Capel and what he's done and what he's building with the Pitt Panthers more than the current state of Wake Forest basketball. Also, I like that group of sophomores with Xavier Johnson, Jalen McGowans. I really like the group moving forward. I think Pitt could be a team that makes the NCAA tournament next year as an at-large team. So Pitt is through to the second round, knocking out Wake Forest in what I believe to be Danny Manning's last game as the Deacons head coach. Virginia Tech, North Carolina, 7 o'clock tonight. I like the Tar Heels here. North Carolina, they outclass the Hokies. The last time they met, it was at the end of January. It was in Blacksburg. It was the low point of the Tar Heel season. B-Rob wasn't playing in that game. Cole Anthony hadn't returned. North Carolina was essentially playing with six guys. I know Christian Keeling played 9 minutes, but it was a bare-bones lineup. It might have been the worst starting five I've ever seen from a North Carolina basketball team under Roy Williams. Still, given all of that, North Carolina went on the road while Virginia Tech was playing good ball at that time, and they took it to double overtime. They probably should have won the game in Blacksburg. North Carolina is on a bit of an upswing. I know they didn't beat Duke, but they've won three of their last four to close the regular season, while Virginia Tech has lost three of their last four going into this tournament. North Carolina is going to have the home crowd behind them as well, so the Tar Heels are through to Wednesday, 9 o'clock tomorrow night to face Syracuse. Going on to day two, Clemson-Miami will get things started at noon. Give me the Clemson Tigers. I'm still unsure if Chris Likes is going to play in that game. Clemson just has far more talent, and they've shown it in stretches this year, beating Louisville, beating Florida State, beating Duke. Clemson going to beat Miami. Pitt has NC State. The Wolfpack faced a scare at the PNC Arena a few weeks ago where Pitt was leading in the second half. NC State hadn't led at any point of the game until they had damn well 60 points on the board. I think NC State's going to find a way, kind of like they did last year against Clemson, but it's going to be tense. There are going to be frightful moments. NC State finds a way to beat Pittsburgh on day two. Notre Dame-Boston College. This is the 7-10 matchup. BC, they really overachieved when you look at the expectations going into the year for the Eagles and Jim Christian. It's an important year for Coach Christian, who's been in place since 2014. Notre Dame, though, they might be one of the teams that have underachieved the most. They have more talent. That's why you see John Mooney, a first-team All-ACC caliber player. I think Juwan Durham has gotten better as the season's gone on in the post. I don't see how BC stops those two bigs, so I like the Fighting Irish to go on to the quarterfinals on Thursday. North Carolina-Syracuse is the nightcap tomorrow. I expect a big crowd at the Coliseum yet again. I think it's going to impact this game. North Carolina won in the Dome a few weeks ago. It was convincing. I think the Syracuse zone versus what North Carolina likes to do, it's just a mismatch. It's not a good draw for the Orange. Jim Boeheim remains winless at the Coliseum. It's going to be North Carolina beating Cuse Thursday night to advance to the quarters. We're on to Thursday now. Florida State first in action. I don't know how, but they're going to beat Clemson. You're not going to lose to Clemson twice in a two-week stretch if you're Florida State winning your first outright ACC title. Too much depth, too much experience. FSU on to the semis. Duke and NC State. I know NC State played well in the first half in Durham. I know they beat the Blue Devils in Raleigh by 22. Duke's going to find a way. It'll be a close game. NC State's going to be uncomfortable on Selection Sunday, having just won one game in this field. Duke gets to the semis for an ACC championship rematch from last year against Florida State. Bottom half of the bracket. This is my big upset of the tournament. Notre Dame wins an ugly game against Virginia. When you play that style, you are susceptible to upsets, and Virginia has been playing razor-tight games all down the stretch of this season. Notre Dame, I think they have slightly better bigs than Virginia does, and I love Mamadi Diakite. However, give me Mooney and Durham over Diakite and Jay Huff. Notre Dame pulls off the upset against Virginia to go to the semifinal round. North Carolina-Louisville in the nightcap, that's where the run and the season ends for the Tar Heels. I think they lose to Louisville. We saw how it was no contest in the Center a few weeks ago. Just a bad matchup. Louisville's going to be more rested. They're going to win this game Thursday night at the Coliseum. The Final Four is Florida State and Duke, Notre Dame and Louisville. The Seminoles lost in the championship game last year. I trust them to win with this group in the tournament more than I trust Duke to show up back-to-back games. FSU lost the regular season meeting with Duke, though. That game was in Cameron. Remember, Cameron, it can impact games. Cameron, it can intimidate players who have never played in that environment. And Florida State only had one guy who had played at Cameron before this year, and that's Trent Forrest. He was the one good player on Florida State. They win that game if they hit foul shots. Since this is a neutral site, and FSU, more experienced, deeper, more reliable, the outright ACC champ, they beat Duke in the semis to go to the championship game. Bottom half of the bracket, Notre Dame, Louisville. Nice run for the Irish. They win two in a row, but Louisville's going to go to the championship game. And since Louisville has a lot of those gears turning in the right direction, I think they're the most talented team in the league. If David Johnson finds a way to take over the reins at point guard, the way that he did in Durham, the way that he did down the stretch, even though it was a loss against Georgia Tech, you just see the talent, you see the size. I don't think anybody beats Louisville. So I like the Cardinals and Chris Mack to be holding up the trophy at the end of this ACC tournament in Greensboro. I like Louisville beating Florida State in the championship game, Robert. And there you have it. My picks for the ACC tournament, now that things are getting started here on a Tuesday, day one of the field. And hey, we're going to be here all week long, Tuesday through Friday, however and wherever you are listening. We certainly appreciate that. You can tweet the show at Sports Hub Triad. And if you miss any of the show, the Best of Podcast is on SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. What's the one I always forget? Spotify. Every single time, Robert. It's always Spotify. Anywho, you are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point, broadcasting live from the Greensboro Coliseum. Side of the ACC tournament, you are listening to Sports Hub Triad. We are broadcasting live inside Greensboro Coliseum, now being joined by the head coach of the NC State Wolfpack, which will be in action tomorrow at 2:30 in the afternoon. Coach Keats, you're on in the Triad, Greensboro, Winston-Salem. This is our home court. It's good to have you with you, Howard. How are you?
Man, I'm doing well, and you're right. This is your home court, and I'm excited to be on your home court.
Let me ask you this about Markell Johnson.
Yep.
Last time you guys were in here, he hits a half-court shot to beat UNCG, and that's not the only time he's hit a half-court shot this year. Is that something he's mastered over the span of his career at NC State?
You know, I don't know that anybody has mastered hitting half-court shots. But if he'd never hit another half-court shot, I think he's hit enough in his career. Man, unbelievable. I think back to that game here. What a great game. They had tied it up. They made a great play. And, you know, he got the ball, and I decided not to call a timeout, and he just made a play. What a great call for me, not calling a timeout, blowing that big-time shot he made.
I've often said that a team's identity is the way that they want to play. When they're playing well, when you feel like your team's playing well, well, that's what our identity is. That's what we want it to be. What do you think this team's identity is?
Well, I think this team identity is when our guards, and I'll echo to what you're saying, when our guards are locked in and we only have four on the roster, but when we've got Devin Daniels and C.J. Bryce and Markell Johnson playing at a high level and then Braxton Beverly making shots, we become a very dangerous team. When you look at the way we played our last game on senior night, our guards played tremendously well. It was great to see Braxton Beverly and the ball go in. And when you got Markell Johnson playing a high level and he's making plays for everybody else and getting himself involved, then we become a very good team. You know, we're a team that can get out in transition. We're a team that, you know, is decent half court. But we're playing our best basketball when those guards are in attack mode.
We were chatting in December, and you said that it was hard in the preseason to really build chemistry and get a flow of things because Markell was banged up at the start of the year. You didn't quite know what was going on with DJ Funderburk, and he had a rocky start to the season. But then the injuries to C.J. Bryce have kind of muddied things a bit as well. So how have the injuries and the lack of depth affected the way you want this team to play?
Well, I mean, look, I know injuries are part of the game, but we've had some very unfortunate situations this year. For the first time in my career, we've had serious concussions. And, you know, at NC State, we take concussions very serious. And then we've had ankle sprains. We've had different situations. And it's altered who we are, who we thought we would be. You know, when I came into the season, I thought we would have a team very similar to Florida State as far as depth, you know, meaning have 10 guys that we can run in and out.
Like you did at UNCW
like,
as well.
Like we had at UNCW, but that kind of changed on it. That's my style of play. So a lot of times this year we found ourselves, you know, obviously having to compete with seven guys, and we were lucky if we had an eighth guy. That being said, when guys would come back off injuries, everybody thought it would magically happen. Well, there were chemistry problems because those guys hadn't practiced a lot. And so it took us a little time to kind of get into a groove.
What do you think about Greensboro as a tournament location?
Well, I like it. I've always liked it. I grew up in Virginia, and I remember having the tournament in Winston-Salem and Greensboro, and obviously the Charlotte area. I love it, obviously, because our fan base has a chance to come watch us play.
And on top of that, how about the women's basketball team on Sunday? Alyssa Kinane, Wes Moore, getting it done in this building. Maybe that's a little bit of foreshadowing for this week.
Well, I'll tell you what, Wes has built a tremendous program, and I give him a lot of credit. When I took the job, I told him that I wanted to build a program with the culture that he has, and he's got, you know, I know we saw how good those girls are on the court, but they're great off the court. They're great students. They compete hard all the time. Wes has done a tremendous job. Kinane, I'm trying to figure out if we can play her. She's good, man. She could play in any league, any men's league, any other league. She's really talented, and we'd love to have her in this tournament if we can borrow her.
It's NC State basketball coach Kevin Keats with us here at the Greensboro Coliseum. Let me know this. How many suits have you packed for this week?
Oh, of course, man. You know, I packed four. You know, I'm not going to sell myself short. I think anybody that comes to the tournament and don't pack enough to go to the championship, they're not prepared to win.
How many of those suits are red? Red jacket?
Hey, you got to wait on that. You know, and if I
red jacket save for Saturday night.
And I can tell you this now: if I don't have the red jacket, I'm close enough to the house where I can go back and get it if we need it.
And then, of course, tomorrow night, like, what suit do you bring for the first round versus what you might have in Saturday?
You know, I've got four, and I'm gonna pick one, and I've got to go and see what the record is of those suits and throughout the season, and try to get the one who's got the best record and try to wear that.
Coach, best of luck later this week, tomorrow night specifically. You got to win one to get the Saturday, get the Friday, and or get the Thursday, get the Friday, and beyond that. Appreciate the time and the tryout.
Guys, thanks for having me.
We're now the opposite of the front of sports talk because we're back to it. Get it?
Well, that's not funny.
Back to the Drive.
That's moronic.
With Josh Graham.
We're broadcasting live from the ACC tournament, Greensboro Coliseum, the first time it's been here in 5 years. And Wake Forest is getting set to open things up against Pittsburgh right now. So what are we going to do? We're going to talk about The Bachelor. It's The Bachelor finale tonight, even though they kind of billed last night as the finale. Really, I guess it's just part one. So we're now being joined by somebody who is a huge Bachelor fan like myself. It is Amy Ufnowski. I pronounce it right?
Ufnowski.
Hashtag
what's
Amy
up.
U. Yeah. Right. Yeah. How are you, Amy U?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me on. And yes, I've been watching The Bachelor since season two.
So are you excited about Claire Crowley being the next Bachelorette?
Yes, I am. She's older, hopefully more mature.
38 years old, going to be 39 during the season.
I read a really interesting article by, what's her name, Amy Kaufman of the LA Times.
Yep.
She did a really nice piece on her being The Bachelor and what it means to, like, not dive back into the 20 to 25-year-old pool, which is fine, whatever. Everyone deserves love, right?
Yes.
So does Claire. And she mentioned how, like, she got, like, a terrible edit in the four times she has been on a Bachelor program. And I thought to myself, well, then why would you go back for more?
It's a fantastic question. We actually have imaging for this segment that's just way too much imaging, but Robert hit it.
So it's another ongoing, never-ending series of The Bachelor. Will Pete push the limits of what's acceptable on national TV?
Yes.
Is Pete here with the intentions of hooking up with as many of the contestants as possible?
Yeah! Yes!
Or is it simply the free booze?
Woohoo!
Pete is on the clock. Welcome to the Bachelor Minute.
Okay. So you haven't watched last night's episode yet.
I have not.
All right. The finale is tonight. it probably would be best to consume this in one sitting anyway. But here's what you need to know.
I think you could, though, like, not watch the first 30 minutes and, like,
still know what's going on.
Still know what's going on.
So Sawyer Dillon, who you're sitting next to right now, our assistant producer, he had Madison in our fantasy draft, our bachelor draft at the start of the year. Robert's three women that he picked all were eliminated in the first episode, but he clawed himself back to say he's got Hannah Brown if she wins, he has Alea if she wins, and somehow he found a way to doctor tape to get Hannah Ann as a sixth pick. So Robert, you're feeling pretty good right now. Hannah Ann, she seems to be the favorite at this present moment, Robert.
I'm back, and I'm better than ever.
Yeah, that's wrestling. What I like to hear, yeah. Josh. Mostly, I'd like to say that I've never watched The Bachelor before this season, and after a terrible draft, I picked up a few free agents, and that's all I needed to win this fantasy Bachelor season. And I'm not even worried about Sawyer. Who's he got? Victoria? Vic Snoria? I'm not worried about her.
No, Madison.
Madison. Okay, well, I had a cool nickname for Victoria, but I guess it doesn't work now.
Yeah, that was a great nickname. Hannah Ann, she's just so good at this game, Amy Yu. She plays the family super well. She's super emotional. It's clear that Pete loves tears, and he succumbs to anybody who's crying in front of him. And on top of that, she's somebody that it just seems at every single point manipulates things perfectly to her advantage. She got the first impression rose, and then at other points, yeah, she was great at the modeling. She worked the family to perfection, and it was clear that the family loved her a lot more than Madison.
Interesting.
Yes.
It was like to the point of, like, she would say, I just love tears, love your son. And then that's all it took. I mean, it was, they were in her arms.
Yeah. Peter is also way too comfortable talking about his lovemaking in front of his parents. Like, let's not forget when Hannah Brown said that he, you know,
had relations in a windmill.
Had relations four different times in that said windmill. His parents were sitting behind him and gave him a standing ovation.
They were cheering.
They were. So they sit down with Peter, and they just have no problem bringing it up. Peter's just like, yeah, she gave me this ultimatum, and I got intimate with the other girls. I'm like, who's bringing this up to their parents so willingly? Peter is. And then his brother's like, I think the line was, obviously, bro, you clearly like to get physical with women in relationships. I'm like, man, my relationship with my brother, we talk sports, we talk about a lot of things. I'm not bringing up to my brother, hey, I know how much you like to get physical with the ladies. Come on. Like, is this strange or am I wrong in
no,
my mom's
it's
face
strange.
Here? Yeah. So that happened, and the mom, it seems like she's trying to angle for her own TV show. We got Barb here doing the entire, bring her home to us, all throughout the year that we've seen teased. And man,
that hasn't happened in real time yet.
Now it has.
Because it has.
It turns out she's talking about Hannah Ann. Madison did not leave a good impression at all. She showed up wearing black and she was in a down mood. She did say that she loves Peter, which I found to be interesting. But then, as they were sitting there, the parents were just so out on her. Mm-hmm. And the parents, after she left, pulled Peter. Yo, she's not here for the right reasons for you. She's not. Bring Hannah Ann home to us. And they start crying. It was pretty stunning television there.
Did they really say the right reasons? Because I think
exactly
Madison, I don't know. I mean,
I agree. Madison's
the best. You could
argue
she's not there for the right reasons.
That's fair. But
or she didn't have the right intentions to come on the show.
Or maybe didn't quite know what the show entailed. Or maybe there's a possibility. She was smart. She was really super pretty. And she advanced a lot further than she thought she would. She maybe wanted the parachute earlier, but Peter was already smitten from the jump, which means she was locked in.
Oh, I agree with all that. But you also have to have a little bit of a reality check and understand, hey, I've signed up for this. This is what is going to happen. He makes his choices. I get to make mine, too. So
it's completely understandable when she says, yeah, I don't want to accept the proposal from you a week after I figured out you're in the fantasy suite with other women. I get that's the show, but I also understand where she's coming from with this. So, yeah, Barb was pretty controversial here. Madison and Peter then go on a date. A lot of helicopters in this episode. Man, retroactively, not a great look, ABC, deciding, let's spend all this time in Australia and also do all these dates involving helicopters, considering the news the last few months regarding Australia, also helicopters. I mean, what's the finale going to be? What's hang out in Italy for the finale? Let's do that.
No,
I don't
know. They're staying in Australia.
Yeah, they're going to stay in Australia. But
in
not
fairness,
great.
Though, you
it was
can't
November.
Predict November to January.
It's bad luck is what
February.
I'm saying. I'm not saying the Bachelor is
going
to do it. It's bad luck. But they went on a date, and then she just said she's going to surrender herself, saying we see things so differently. And she essentially took herself out of the contest, Madison. Or
good
at
for
least
her.
From what we think. Then he goes on a date with Hannah Ann, does not tell Hannah Ann what just happened with Madison.
But he knows Madison is out.
It seems like, yeah, he knows
she's
out.
He's aware, she's gone.
That's right. Does not tell Hannah Ann, and they go on a date involving baby kangaroos. Like, they are bottle feeding baby kangaroos. It is clearly the better date. And I feel like if Madison got the baby kangaroo date, maybe things go better than what they did, where they just went on top of a mountain. Or on top of, like, this crater that was in Australia. It was pretty, but the baby kangaroos, it seemed a lot better. Hannah Ann, she got the baby kangaroo date, and then she said Peter dropped the line that his heart's being pulled in different directions. A really strange thing to say a day after Madison just said peace.
He said that to Hannah Ann.
Said that to Hannah Ann, and Hannah Ann started crying.
Whew.
Drama. That's what we got on The Bachelor.
I don't know.
So now Chris Harrison's talking about Madison might be returning tonight in the finale. So we're trying to figure out what tonight is going to be. Who's going to win this show? Do you check spoilers?
Is there going to be a winner? Like, that's my question.
What he keeps saying,
never happened though.
Chris Harrison said that the people, the Peter, doesn't even know what's going to happen.
Well...
That's
what
he said. Like, it's all going to happen on the live show.
I'm not buying into that.
Oh, you're very smart. Very, very smart, Amy. You know how television works too well.
I'm not buying into that.
And your PR role with the ACC Network and ESPN.
Peter can't not know really what's happening with himself, right?
It's tough to say. Like, this final episode, it seems like Madison's going to come back. And clearly Peter likes Madison more than everybody else.
Oh, she's coming back 100%.
Peter likes Madison because he can't have Madison.
Bingo. That's very well said. Like,
he wants what he can't have, and that's normal for any person.
Yeah.
You go after it a little bit harder when you know it's not a sure thing, right?
Oh, my gosh. This is great analysis, but it's down to Sawyer's first-round pick or second-round pick?
Second-round.
Madison and also Hannah Ann for Robert. Later on tonight. Exhilarating stuff in The Bachelor. Are you going to find time to watch it this week amid everything happening?
I'm going to try. Don't tell my boss that. But
I won't.
I'm going to try. I was having a moment last night when I couldn't watch it in real time or even on delay. And it wasn't an ideal situation for me. Because now I woke up and I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. I mean, I kind of do, but I kind of don't.
Right. I don't think we all know what's
Because I
going
also
on.
Follow spoilers, right? But the spoilers this year have been all over the place in some ways.
They've done a good job keeping everything intact, keeping their cards close to their vest. Kevin Keats, he's going to join us in about 40 minutes. It is Amy Yu, our good friend from the ACC Network and ESPN, joining us. Ufnowski.
Yep.
I'll get it
good
eventually.
Good old Polish name.
I'll get
You'll
it eventually.
You'll get it eventually. It's spelled how it's
I'm
sounds.
Not sure. I know some of the people in the ACC office. They listen quite a bit. Unfortunately for you, if you don't want word getting out about your interest in The Bachelor tonight, we got the local radio station here.
You know, I think it's pretty well documented, per myself, that
people know.
I watch The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And The Bachelorette.
And you need to follow her on Twitter, @AmyUF. Good stuff.
Hashtag what's up.
Hashtag what's up. Hashtag ACC tourney. Is that what we're using
hashtag
this week?
Hashtag ACC tourney. Turn it on. ACC Network. Hashtag, we got you covered tonight.
Hashtag we do this.
Hashtag we do this.
All right. That
Thanks
is,
for having me, Josh.
Yes, we will look ahead to Kevin Keats. Also, we'll look ahead to the future of the ACC tournament, what we may know about some of the sites moving forward. This is The Drive.